Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. You can call in your questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org, or you can even tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Take this opportunity to check in with Mayor Rozworski on what's going on in Lafayette. Our phone lines and our inboxes are open. So let's get the show started. I did want to ask really quick before we get started. I know that last month you'd mentioned to Stan that right after Ask the Mayor, you were headed to Mexico for a vacation. How did that go? Did you have a good time?
It was nice to get away for a little bit and spend some time with my family. And overall, we had a good time. Got to go out on some boats and see some really neat things and spend some time with some of my kids, which I don't get to do a lot of. So it was it was nice to take a little break. Yes, thank
Absolutely.
You for asking.
So you were out on a boat. One more quick question for you, Mayor. Are you a fisherman? Do you like going fishing?
You know, I'd like to fish kind of though in Indiana streams and lakes and that type of fishing. I'm not really a deep sea fishing. So we were out doing some snorkeling and some things like that and some sightseeing of some places. And so it was more of those things as opposed to a fishing trip. But it was a lot of fun.
Okay, absolutely. All right. Well, let's get to it. We are starting today's show with not one, but two listener questions on the same topic. So I'll paraphrase a little bit.
Sure.
But Phil writes in, I have a question regarding the condition of the railroad crossing on 26, just east of 52. He says his understanding is based on a previous question on Ask the Mayor. He said he thought we were going to upgrade that crossing with the recent maintenance and improvements done to 26 in that immediate area. So he's asking, when will the crossing be fixed? And can we please address this problem soon? And Kevin emails, echoing Phil, I wanted to ask the mayor when they're going to smooth out the railroad tracks in front of the post office and why they didn't do that altogether. And I will also add that both gentlemen reference some car issues they say have resulted from some rough passage over that railroad crossing. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a twofold question there. So as part of the Sagamore project, we did work with the railroad because the city of Lafayette cannot touch the rails. We cannot actually touch the railroad crossings without going through an entire process. And then even then, they come in and actually do the work and we pay for it.
Okay.
So, you know, I can't actually just smooth out the railroad crossing. I can do the asphalt up to the edge of it, but I can't touch the rails or I can't do anything like that. We did work with the railroad to get the crossings worked on Cassoo Street, on South Street, but closer to Earl Avenue. And then they just recently worked on the one there on Farabee Drive, where it turns into Farabee Drive. So we've got three of the four done. That intersection there, that crossing there, we'd really like to totally rebuild that. So it's kind of like the crossing down on Greenbush Street.
Okay.
Where we actually, the concrete, prefab concrete is brought in. And if you go down Greenbush Street, you cross that, it's been like that for many years now, and it's held up incredibly well. That's between all the engineering, we have to pay the railroad for all the engineering and all the permits, and then we have to pay for all the construction. That's probably over $1 million project just to fix that railroad crossing. So we are working through that process of getting that design, working through that. I would hope in the next year we would get that done. We are trying to ask the railroad to come in and at least do some temporary fixes, you know, raise the rails there a little bit, do some temporary work. Like I said, we can do the asphalt up to it to try to get that better than it is for the next year. But we didn't want to do just a half project. We want to totally rebuild that in a way that will last literally for years and years, because it is such a high traffic area. But I cannot come in and touch those rails or the you know, the crossing members that go underneath it or anything like that. We're not allowed to do that. So we are working with them to get a long-term fix. Unfortunately, wasn't able to put everything together to get it done during this exact time frame, but we're still working on that. So we know that it's a crossing that would like to be repaired, but please know, we just can't do it. That's, we're not legally allowed to. There's an entire process that we have to go through.
Okay. So it sounds like this has been on your radar before now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big crossing, and, you know, we would have liked to have been able to get it all done in this time frame, but, you know, there was a lot of utilities to move, everything from telephone lines to wire to electrical wires to underground cables to fiber optics to gas lines, water lines, sewer lines. Things had to be bored, and, you know, we have to be careful not to add too much more time to the length of the project. I mean, people have been very patient out there. The businesses have been very patient, and you know, I don't want to stall any longer. We need to get that open. We need to get people going through there, and then we'll work through this next process and lay it out in a way that we can do that with as least disruption as possible. But it's not something we can just say, hey, we want to work on that tomorrow, and we do. It just doesn't work that way.
Okay. And on last month's show, you did talk about the reopening of that intersection, and that has happened. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, that's one lane going in each direction at this point.
Yeah, sometimes there's more than one lane, and there's turn lanes. It just depends what work they're still doing. There is some work to be done out there. I'm hoping we're within a couple weeks of basically having everything finished except some of the work in the median. It's just so hot right now. Mm-hmm. It's not a good time to plant trees and to plant flowers. We need to get a little bit further into the fall and grass and some of those things. So there will need to be some landscaping type work done a little bit later. But we're really hoping within the next couple weeks, the major piece of the construction is just totally down. And then 90-some% of all the construction people are actually out of there, maybe just a few people doing touch-up work, punch list type items, and that we're really starting to narrow that down.
Okay. So now that intersection is open and understanding that traffic patterns are probably sometimes unpredictable, according to some residents, it sounds like traffic is now backing up for several blocks west of the intersection along 26.
That's part of what the crews are finishing up. There's actually no computerized traffic control taking place right now. So the lights are just on a general cycle. Every so many minutes, they turn. What typically we do through there and all of our other roads is we actually have a software system and camera system that runs the lights in a way that makes traffic move more efficiently. Now that all the pavement is done and all the pavement has to be done, the company that comes back, and you, if you look at roads, you'll see them that cut the grooves into the roadways and put all the detection and all the wiring in the road. So as the cars are pulling over it, it's sending the signals. They're out there right now cutting all those in every single lane, at every single stoplight, at every single turn lane. So that traffic detection is in there. So that software system will run those lights. And when that's done in the next couple of weeks, you'll see traffic flow much, much better, because they'll all be in progression going up and down Sagamore. They'll be on progression for South Street there. But right now, they're not. They're just running simply so many seconds each direction, regardless if there's a car there or not, till all those loops and all the wiring is put back into pavement. But you can't do that until the final asphalt layer has been put down and most of the painting is done. And so they're in the process of doing that right now. And once that's done, you'll see much, because we've added lots of turn lanes. You know, it's been interesting. One of the things that people have talked to most about, besides the appearance of Sagamore being so much better, because quite frankly, people remember when it was a state highway before we had it, was like a minefield. You couldn't even drive up and down it. It was so bad. Is the left turn lanes that we've created with the flashing left arrows, and how much more traffic that moves with each cycle that we've been able to do. And we've added those at all the intersections, and we think that's really going to help. But the big issue right now, and your listeners are absolutely correct, those lights are not on the actual software system that runs the light with all the computer detection. They're just on a simple time cycle right now, till those loops are all put in the ground.
All right. You're listening to Ask the Mayor. Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. Thanks for being with us. You can call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an emailed question to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question @WBAA News on Twitter. And we do have another listener question, Mayor, from Mike, who has a curbside recycling question.
Okay.
He says, recent reports on NPR have indicated that nationally, the markets for recycling materials are in flux. About 25% of items sent to recycling centers end up in landfills. And that one problem is recycled glass that's easily broken, which can contaminate a whole load of otherwise recyclable materials. And many times people toss in products that aren't really recyclable. So have your vendors given you any feedback on these issues? And is the advice on the city's website still valid? When in doubt, throw it in.
Well, I mean, there is no doubt that recycling prices, cardboard, all of those things are much different now than they have been in the past. And that is something that we all need to be aware of. And there is some concern over that. But at this point, with our primary vendor that we use for taking our recycling, we use two vendors because we have routes. So we do drop off at two spots. But our primary vendor has still working with us very well. It has not been a problem for us here locally, and we hope that that does continue, because we certainly want to encourage people to recycle. We do want them to we want to make it as easy as possible, so we do allow co-mingling here, you know, because we want to make it as easy as possible, but we do ask people to be smart about what they recycle and to do it right. But right now, we're still doing okay, and so we're going to continue in that path. But as you said, nationally, actually, this is an issue, and you know, China used to take a lot of those things, and that's changing. And so it's something we all going to have to be aware of, because certainly we want everybody to continue to recycle. It's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for the environment. We don't want things to end up in a landfill that don't absolutely have to. And so we ask that people continue to do that diligently. And also, if there are ways to, you know, not just recycle, but reuse, if there's things you can reuse also, so it cuts down everything a little bit, that's also a good path for us to take.
We have another listener question. People are really wanting to hear from you today, Mayor.
Okay. Right, yeah.
On North 30th, off of Union, going south, the caller says it's heavily trafficked now after repairs. People use it as a racetrack, she says. Can some speed zone signs be installed? And her secondary question is, what can be done about people who park on the wrong side of the street?
Well, certainly. And that was, could you give me that location?
Absolutely. On North 30th off of Union going south.
North off of Union going south. Well, and I'm from what your listener said there, it sounds like we've done some road repairs there. And yeah, that typically happens once we do that. People seem to drive faster for some reason. I'm not sure why. But certainly if there are no speed limit signs up in that area, we can certainly look at getting some additional speed limit signs up there and some additional traffic enforcement. We have the police department write citations up there and try to get people's attention. And we just ask the general public to please slow down, you know, especially with school starting now and kids going back to school. We just ask everybody to slow down. And you know, if that's off of Union there, hopefully once we get the rest of Sagamore done in that intersection, in that whole area there, you know, maybe that will help take some of the pressure off that road a little bit. But we can certainly take a look at that. It's easy to put up some speed limit signs if necessary. We've got to get people to pay attention to those. Putting up speed limit signs certainly is not some silver bullet for getting people to slow down. But we put some signs up there and run some additional radar. And you know, it's the reality is when you write some citations, that typically does tend to slow people down. It doesn't always keep it from coming back, but it's certainly something we can keep an eye on.
Okay. It looks like the other question, the second part, was what can be done about people who park on the wrong side of the street?
Well, I'm not sure if they clarified. Are they parking facing the wrong direction, or are they parking in a no parking zone?
Now, that I cannot tell you.
So if it's in a no parking zone, if they'll just call the police department, we can certainly come up and write a ticket for that if that's what necessary, or try to make contact with the individuals if they're parking in an area that's clearly marked no parking. If they're parking facing the wrong direction, that's a little bit trickier the way our ordinance reads, but it's something that we certainly can make contact with people and try to get them to comply.
Okay. But, yeah, it looks like I've received clarification. It was facing the wrong way.
Yeah, that's a little bit tougher for us. The ordinance is written in a little bit funny that way. It might be something we need to update, that if there's not a designation of markings on the roadway, that it's a little bit tough for enforce when people challenge us. But if it's a constant problem, it's certainly something we can send the district officer up there that works that area and try to make contact with the folks and see if we can get them to park the right direction.
Okay. We have another caller. Will the decorative lights on Sagamore, the ones that change colors, be reactivated soon?
Yeah, once we get the middle section done, all of those lights are looped together from one end to the other. And so we've done that road in sections over a period of years because it's such a massive project. And sometimes it's easy to forget about. It's really not just the new road. Underneath that is massive sewer lines, water lines, new storm lines and things like that. Lots of new infrastructure that you can't even see. So all the wiring, everything is looped together. So once we get the middle section done, we'll be able to get all of those reconnected and make that entire loop. And, they'll come back on. Now, they're not always, our goal is at certain periods, they'll just probably be a soft white, just kind of some more lighting for safety and things like that. And then for special occasions, we'll turn them different colors and things like that. So, they're not going to be a different color all the time or switching daily because somebody's got to program that and everything. So they'll for really special occasions, we'll turn them different colors and we'll let the community know why they're the color that they are is once the project here finishes up.
Okay, you're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski is our guest. You can still call in your questions by dialing 765-496-1999 and email ask@wbaa.org or tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. We do have another listener question. Lafayette got recognition recently for increasing per capita income. They'd like to know what's actually been achieved and to what does the mayor attribute that?
Well, I mean, if you read the article closely, it has went up. Now, it's not went up as much as we would like it to. And if you look at Greater Lafayette Commerce, working with Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, that our economic development group, that is one of our goals. We have goals in there to increase population by 25,000 by 2026. And one of the other big goals in there is to actually increase medium income in our community. That is something that we really want to continue to push by creating jobs, getting people the training that they need to get good paying jobs, allow them to have that quality of life that we want everyone to have here in the community, and to raise that income level. And so that's a goal of ours. So it's nice that we are moving in that direction. We certainly are not where we want to be yet, but we are making progress, and I think that's important. And I think we continue to attribute that to the growth of our manufacturing base with Subaru hiring Caterpillar, announced just a couple months ago a $71 million expansion, hiring hundreds of people. And so, we continue to work very hard to create those jobs that working with our private sector to create a business atmosphere that allows them to invest money in our community and create those new positions that pay people well. And we want to be able to continue to do that. And then we work through Greater Lafayette Commerce, Purdue, Ivy Tech, our local schools, on how do we get people the training that they need to either get into those jobs for the first time, or if they're folks that are already in the workforce but they'd like a better job, how do we get them that training so they can continue to develop their skills to be able to get some of those jobs. And so, I think that's the direction that we're going, and that's the direction that we want to keep going is keep that business atmosphere. And we hear that a lot, that because Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, we all work together on many things. We've created that atmosphere that makes people comfortable investing money here in their business and industry, large and small. We need everybody, you know, out there helping, pulling on the same side of the rope, and we want to certainly continue to do that. So it was certainly nice to see that we're moving in the right direction.
And Mayor, we have one quick follow-up question to the railroad track question. We're going to go all the way back to the beginning of the show. Kevin, who wrote about the railroad tracks, wants to know if they are even in use, and if they're not in use, can they be removed?
No, they're actually in use. They run over to Alcoa, they go down to Tate and Lyle, and they move things back and forth. I actually live right off Greenbush Street, so I hear the whistles of those trains go off three or four o'clock in the morning because those the crossings there at Greenbush, the crossing at Beach, the crossing at Main Street now is some of those spurs that tie in there are signalized so you don't hear the train. But the other one, they have to blow the whistle so many times. So, yes, they are actually in use.
All right. Let's shift gears here for a second. At the last Redevelopment Commission meeting, a draft study was presented indicating that even more housing will be needed downtown in the next few years, and that there are housing needs in the downtown area for both older professionals and younger professionals. So I'm just curious, you know, part of what makes living in a downtown area attractive is that appeal of having restaurants and nightlife and kind of that walkability, retail options all right there, easily accessible. So how do you appeal simultaneously to these two kind of different demographics and make downtown kind of cohesive and a whole?
Well, I think that's part of the reason that we did that study. So we could see exactly, you know, getting a lot of different opinions and collecting a lot of data where those points actually landed. You know, everybody really feels like, yeah, there's a big market for downtown living, and we know there was waiting lists. The Mark is opening, and it had a waiting list before it opened. The Press, the old Journal and Courier building, and the Painters Hall there that opened a couple weeks ago when I was there for the ribbon cutting, I think they'd already leased 20 of the units in just a very short time. So everybody felt like you know, there really is a market for downtown. But, you know, what did that market look like, as you said there appropriately, as the study showed? Was it for all millennials? Was it young professionals? Was it some folks going into the next stage of their life?
Absolutely.
And what are they looking for? So, you know, that's really why we did the study, so we could get an idea of those units. But the study also helped us with, you know, where are there underused areas, like areas that just are parking lots that could become mixed-use development. Buildings that maybe are not being used to their highest and best use. Is there a property owner there that we could work with to get that developed? And so, as you said, we rolled that out, and the reality was it came back very good, that even under worst case scenarios, there's still a significant demand for downtown living. And so, as you know, we do have a new building going up called Star City Crossing right next to City Hall. We have a set of brownstones going up right now on top of the Mark opening and the Press opening. But even with that, it still shows over the next 5 years there's a significant demand. And then on top of that, you probably also saw at the same meeting, we approved the contract working with the Realtors Association, the Builders Association, Lafayette, West Lafayette, and again, Tippecanoe County, to go ahead and do a housing study for the whole county, not just downtown. But taking a look in the two cities and the county, you know, what type of housing are people looking for in general, and what type of neighborhood should we be looking at, and how should we look at blending, you know, the mixed use of sizes and incomes, and, you know, how do you create culturally and economic diverse areas that people want to live in and have those amenities, you know, not just necessarily building the, you know, three-bedroom, two-bath ranch or something on a typical lot. You know, is there a way to mix and match the housing options even in the same neighborhood so a variety of people live there, looking at pocket parks and different things like that. So we're really excited to get that kicked off, and I think we did it right. Again, a collaborative effort with the governments, but then bringing in the Realtors Association, building in the Builders Association, all of those people that have a role to make sure we got a lot of opinions, a lot of eyes on it. And I'm really excited to see what that says. So all of us together as a community, the public and private sector, us working on infrastructure and roads and where parks goes, and the builders and realtors working together to really lay out a dynamic vision that will keep this community growing for decades and help us achieve that goal of that 25,000 people that we want to add to Tippecanoe County in that window, because we know that we're doing working well with the private sector to create those jobs. And if we create those housing options and other community amenities at the same time, as I said, we're working on the new baseball stadium, things at Tropicanoe Cove, the zoo, all of those things, that's what's going to keep us ahead of the curve in what's a very competitive economic global economic environment.
So kind of to wrap up here today in our last few minutes, mm-hmm. I do want to shift gears to a different conversation about housing. You know, tomorrow is the groundbreaking ceremony for a new facility for the LTHC homeless services at 13th and Salem. And I was talking with the executive director, Jennifer Layton, yesterday. She told me they're hoping to open in the fall of 2019. And the top two floors of that facility will consist of 40 one-bedroom apartments that provide permanent supportive housing. That's in addition to 59 other units that LTHC already owns. So do you have any thoughts about adding that housing into the system?
Well, I mean, you know, it's really tomorrow. The groundbreaking is a special day. I don't know if it was 3 or 4 years ago, we started this discussion at City Hall in the Board of Works room. And we, you know, several of us had met. We talked about how do you end homelessness. You know, the goal was to end homelessness in 10 years, which, you know, was kind of a national movement at the time. And we were really trying to put ideas in place when it came to permanent supportive housing, when it came to a lot of different services than needs that people have to lift them up, get them housed. You know, we run Shelter Plus Care through the city of Lafayette that we actually house people. And the question kept coming around is, and how do we coordinate services in a way that make it as easy for people to navigate the system as possible? And that's really where the idea of this engagement center, I know we're calling it Union Place Apartments, mm-hmm. but I mean, it's really an engagement center. And how did we incorporate into kind of a one-stop shop, getting people back on their feet through the services without sending them, you know, seven different places to try to get information? How did we make it easy and then add some permanent supportive housing? And so this has been talked about for many, many years. And so we're certainly glad that it's coming to fruition. I think it's in a good spot, and it's an important groundbreaking day tomorrow. That in a couple years, I think we're going to make a significant difference in the lives of people.
Okay, and you spoke to this, but certainly part of the idea is to put a bunch of services in one space so that people aren't ping-ponging around everywhere. They have access to lots of things in one location. I know they want to have space for offices for other service providers, and part of the plans also include an on-site medical clinic and some medical respite rooms for members of the homeless community. You know, someone who just had surgery comes out of the hospital, they have nowhere to go.
Yep.
So that's kind of a new form of outreach that they're trying to provide. So in our final 10 seconds here, you know, what are some of the unmet needs here for homelessness in Lafayette?
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest one is for families. If you kind of look at the data, I mean, it's for families. If you look at our point in time counts, and Adam Murphy on my staff works very closely on this, the number of homeless people that we're finding is actually going down. But homeless families is an area that we need to continue to work on.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. That's our time for today. Thanks for being with us. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions at ask@WBAA.org or tweet us at WBAA News on Twitter. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.